This morning, America's First News starts right after this.
As a business owner, you need protection for your physical and financial assets. From general and professional liability insurance to business owners and commercial auto policies, GEICO can help. Go to geicocommercial.com for your free quote and see how much you could save today.
From Compass Media Networks, this is America's First News. This morning, with your host, Gordon Deal.
Oil rig explosion in Louisiana. Good morning, I'm Gordon Deal. Along with Jennifer Koschenka, it is Monday, October 16. Thanks for being with us. Here's what we have for you this hour.
Officials say at least seven people have been injured after an oil platform exploded and caught fire on Lake Pontchartrain north of New Orleans.
With winds dying down in Northern California, firefighters have gotten a better handle on raging wildfires.
Truck bomb explosions in Somalia have killed more than 300 in one of the deadliest attacks in years.
And in the baseball playoffs, on a lighter note, while you may know notice that these New York Yankees are not the ones of old.
Well, the Yankees for pretty much my entire life and really the lives of a lot of people have always been good. They win every year. They have won, it seems like, every year for the last, you know, century or so. But they haven't exactly been what I would describe as a very likable team or a very fun team.
Wall Street Journal baseball writer Jared Diamond on the changing image of the Yankees, who host Game 3 in the ALDS against the Astros tonight. Well, at least seven people have been injured and one person is missing after an oil rig exploded and caught fire on Lake Pontchartrain in Louisiana. It happened last night at around 7:45 local time. Emergency officials from St. Charles Parish, along with the U.S. Coast Guard, are among those responding. Andrew Love, who lives about 10 blocks away from the explosion, told the Times-Picayune that his house actually shook. Sheriff Joseph Lopinto of St. Charles Parish says the cause of the blast was still unknown.
Obviously, with any type of these incidences, there's always environmental concerns.
Roger Fernandez, who offered a view on Facebook Live, said the explosion, quote, shook me out of my couch. The rig, according to the New Orleans Advocate, is operated by Clovelly Oil. Lake Pontchartrain, by the way, is roughly a 30-minute drive north of New Orleans. The Advocate reported that Jefferson Parish Councilman Chris Roberts cited Facebook posts claiming that flying parts from the explosion had hit homes in the city of Kenner. Firefighters are making noticeable progress on the deadliest wildfires in California history with help from winds that have died down. The smoke and flames have claimed at least 40 lives since last Sunday. Two of the three most destructive fires in Northern California were more than half contained. Some residents who fled the flames in hard-hit Sonoma County could be allowed to return home in the next 24 hours. Nancy Nessman works at a Napa Valley winery and doesn't know when she'll get back to work.
It's been only a week. It seems like it's been a month of this. It's just every day has been full of emotion.
More than 5,700 structures have been destroyed by more than a dozen wildfires, which have consumed an area larger than New York City. The city of Santa Rosa lost entire neighborhoods. Warm and very dry weather is forecast to continue through today with a chance of rain tomorrow after cooler weather moves in. About 11,000 firefighters, by the way, are supported by air tankers and helicopters. Overseas in Somalia, more than 300 people have been killed and more than 300 injured by a pair of bomb blasts in the capital of Mogadishu. More from this morning's Mike Gavin.
The blasts from two truck bombs Saturday night are nothing new in Somalia, but these are the deadliest attacks since the Islamist insurgency began 10 years ago. While no group has claimed responsibility, it's believed to be the work of Al-Shabaab, terrorists based in Somalia. Hundreds of people this year alone have been killed or wounded in attacks on the capital city. One doctor at a local hospital told Reuters that 160 bodies could not be recognized, so they were buried by the government. Gordon.
Thank you, Mike. It is 10 minutes now after the hour on this morning. Thanks for being with us. Welcome into Monday. President Trump today is scheduled to meet with Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell to discuss budget and tax issues, with health care also a possible topic. Meanwhile, Republicans are waging a multi-front battle within the party, creating schisms between the president, lawmakers, and their base that threaten to upend both the GOP's legislative agenda and political standing ahead of the 2018 midterm elections. It's a story from James Arkin, congressional correspondent at Real Clear Politics. James, explain.
It's kind of a mess for Republicans right now. I mean, they're fighting sort of a multi-front war within the party. You have, you know, Senator Bob Corker and President Trump trading barbs back and forth, both on Twitter and then in a pretty explosive interview that Senator Corker gave to the New York Times over the weekend. And then you have, you know, House Republicans, you know, just really, really frustrated with their Senate counterparts over the slow movement of the agenda in the upper chamber. President Trump has been critical of Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell. And then you now have Stephen Bannon calling for primary challenges to essentially almost every Republican senator who's running for re-election next year. So it's really just sort of a mess within the party right now, a lot of different battles for them to fight. And I think Senate Republicans in particular, but Republican lawmakers just generally feel sort of really squeezed on all sides and really frustrated and nervous about where things are.
What's going on here? Is this the nature of the party in charge?
I think it absolutely is the nature of the party in charge and the nature of the Republican Party. I mean, when you're in charge of the government, the way the Republicans are controlling the White House, the House, and the Senate, people expect results, and they haven't been able to produce. Obviously, the Obamacare failure was, you know, a failure of pretty spectacular proportion, given their long campaign promises on that, and so their voters are very frustrated. But then you look back at some of the fights that have happened in the party in recent years. I mean, this is, you know, primary challenges are nothing new for Republicans. There were conservatives in 2010, 2012, and 2014, a little bit less last year. But all those previous cycles challenging incumbent senators, criticizing them for not being conservative enough, for not fighting enough in Washington. I think there was some hope within the party that gaining control of the White House and pushing through an agenda would kind of quiet those sparring factions within the party, but clearly their failure to enact their agenda has not necessarily even not quieted it, but it has inflamed those tensions, and there's even more frustration within the party than there was in recent years.
Boy, the kind of fractured relationship between President Trump and Senator Corker as that relates to tax reform. Because, as you point out in the story, Senator Corker is needed on any legislation on that front. Is that relationship reparable?
I think the relationship is probably reparable to some degree. You know, Senator Corker, for months and months in this administration, was one of President Trump's closest allies on Capitol Hill. He speaks with him frequently. He's met with him very often throughout the administration. And he was kind of a real defender of President Trump going back to the election. So this is a real break for him to not criticize the president privately, but, you know, in a very, very public way. But I think if he feels like he sees signs that things are getting back on track in the White House, he'll say so publicly. And if he says some positive things publicly about President Trump, you know, we've seen from President Trump, if you're criticizing him, he's likely to punch back. And if you're praising him, he's likely to sort of warmly receive it. So I think if Senator Corker feels like things are turning around, he can see visible signs of improvement, he'll say so, and that will probably buoy President Trump. He'll probably have some positive things to say back. So I think the relationship is reparable. But as you mentioned, tax reform, Senator Corker is kind of driven a hard line on that. He says he won't vote for a tax package that increases the deficit. He's very upfront about that. He's kind of one of the biggest fiscal hawks left in the Senate, and obviously his retirement means that he won't have to face voters over this choice again.
Right.
So if he votes against that would be a real, real problem for Republicans, and I think that would do irreparable damage to his relationship with President Trump and possibly his party's relationship with President Trump in terms of all Senate Republicans.
We're speaking with James Arkin, congressional correspondent at Real Clear Politics. He's written a piece called "Can Republicans De-escalate Intra-Party Warfare?" If tax reform winds up passing, does a legislative victory like that heal all wounds, relationship wounds, I guess?
I think that it heals. The key is it heals some wounds, not all wounds. So I think what we were talking about, you know, Senator Corker and President Trump and Senator McConnell and President Trump, I think if tax reform passes, those relationships heal. There's a real sense that they got a legislative win. Senators came through for the president on something. He came through for them in terms of pushing for something that they need. I think those relationships are very repairable if tax reform passes. I think what's not fixable is what Steve Bannon is doing in challenging Republican senators in primaries. I think he seems very intent on continuing with these challenges, trying to sort of purge the so-called establishment Republicans who he feels you know, don't fight enough, aren't loyal enough to President Trump. There's a lot of dispute about whether that is a fair assessment of these senators. But I think even if tax reform passes, Steve Bannon is going to be intent upon, you know, going through with these primary challenges, you know, keeping the fire on these Republicans and trying to make them feel very pressured and nervous about their reelections.
Thanks, James. James Arkin, congressional correspondent at Real Clear Politics. It's 19 minutes now after the hour on this morning. Jennifer Koshenka is here with more of America's First News.
Gordon, with the winds dying down, fire crews are starting to gain ground as they battle the wildfires that have devastated California wine country and other parts of the state over the past week. And thousands of people are getting the all clear to return home. But Captain Rick Crawford says firefighters are still dealing with more than a dozen fires.
With all the fires combined, we're still considering over 33,000 structures threatened in the event that there is an unexpected turn of events.
The death toll from a week of blazes has reached at least 40, while the number of those under evacuation orders is down to 75,000. The most powerful bomb blast ever witnessed in Somalia's capital has killed at least 300 people with hundreds of others injured, making it the deadliest single attack in the African nation. Hospitals are overwhelmed after a truck bomb targeted a crowded street near key government ministries in Mogadishu. Somalia's government is blaming the al-Qaeda-linked al-Shabaab extremist group for what it calls a national disaster. A key moderate Republican is urging President Trump to support a bipartisan Senate effort to reinstate insurer payments, calling his move to halt the subsidies an immediate threat to millions of people who could now face rising premiums and lost health care coverage. Susan Collins of Maine appeared yesterday on ABC.
Well, I'm very disappointed in the president's actions of this past week. The debate in Washington has been whether or not to repeal the Affordable Care Act in the future. What the president is doing is affecting people's access and the cost of health care right now.
Collins says the payments do not bail out insurers. They are used to help low-income people afford their deductibles and co-pays.
So I'm just supposed to keep dying until I figure out who my killer is? That's your genius plan.
Do you have a better idea?
It seems the only way for Hollywood to draw big box office numbers is to release movies that scare audiences. Happy Death Day finished first over the weekend, taking in $26.5 million, five times its budget. Number two was Blade Runner 2049, followed by The Foreigner, It, and The Mountain Between Us.
Finally had a movie that made money on its opening weekend?
Not only
Happy Death Day?
It only took $5 million to make it, so I'm sure it's really big budget there.
Got some high school kids doing the editing or whatever. Thanks, Jen. 22 minutes now after the hour. On this morning, America's First News. Glad you could be with us. Welcome into Monday. Grocery delivery companies are worried Amazon will sacrifice profits to deprive them of sales. Tough to compete in that environment. Amazon upended book selling and other retail sectors by concentrating on market share over margins. Wall Street Journal reporter Heather Hatton says grocery executives expect Amazon's purchase this summer of Whole Foods to indicate a similar rush into their business. Heather, what do we have here?
Competitors are certainly scared. So the focus here was on an interview that the co-founder of the Peapod grocery delivery service did at our the Wall Street Journal's Global Food Forum this week, and he said there that Amazon really is the first competitor they've ever faced. They've been in operation since 1989, where that company didn't really have to care about profit. So Amazon really operates in its own kind of terms when it comes to Wall Street. So, of course, they have to, you know, show that they're adding volume, but they have so many different divisions and so many different types of services and have, you know, robust commercial services so that this grocery segment that they're now ramping up, particularly with their purchase with Whole Foods, is really just one piece in a much larger profit puzzle for them. So selling and delivering groceries online is very complicated. It's very expensive, but they can really do this from the approach of this is just one part of their equation, whereas someone like Peapod, this is all they do. So this is a much bigger threat.
Wow. We're speaking with Wall Street Journal reporter Heather Hatton. Her piece is called Grocers Worry Amazon Will Sacrifice Profits to Lure Shoppers. So did the Peapod guy mean Amazon is not worried about profits right now in this particular line of work? Or because
Correct.
They're making money elsewhere.
Just, experiment and fiddle around with this and probably waste a lot of money on it to begin with. You know, they've been running Amazon Fresh, their grocery delivery service in select markets for a while now, and there has been a lot of reports that that has been, you know, a difficult transition for them. It's a lot different to deliver lettuce than it is from delivering, you know, linens to someone. Yeah. I mean, there's just it's just a much more complex formula. And so I think they've had, you know, kind of some challenges with that. But adding Whole Foods really gives them a new platform to try to experiment from those stores and from delivering from those stores. So Peapod is really looking at this and saying, you know, for the first time we're really facing a competitor who operates like none other.
How about some of the others? I know you spoke to a startup delivery also. What are they saying?
Yeah, so you know, so grocery delivery has been operated like, you know, an extension of traditional supermarkets for as long as we've known it. But Amazon is really bringing a different approach, and others are also seeing that they could take more of a data and analytics-based approach to grocery delivery. So really looking very selectively of the kind of items people buy, how often they buy, and trying to really use that to refine the assortments of items they have in stock. So this one startup that I interviewed at the forum said that they are operating much, much smaller fulfillment centers where they only have, you know, several thousand types of items on hand, as opposed to a grocery store that has tens of thousands. And they see that as a way to cut down on costs and make themselves more competitive and nimble and able to deliver much quicker and cheaper to customers than a traditional grocery store trying to add on grocery delivery to what they already do.
Thanks, Heather. Wall Street Journal reporter Heather Haddon. 30 minutes now after the hour on This Morning, America's First News.
Small business never stops moving, so Dell's U.S.-based small business technology advisors are trained to keep up. Just call 877-BUY-DELL to get connected with an advisor who will get to know your business and tailor a solution with Dell PCs powered by Intel Core processors that is right for you, so you can focus on your business and leave the tech questions to Dell. Call 877-BUY-DELL to get in touch with a tech advisor today.
You don't often find the words business and friendly in the same sentence, let alone the same state. Unless, of course, you're talking about Michigan. Michigan's business-friendly practices help them become a leader in industries that range from agriculture and cybersecurity to aerospace and defense. In fact, Michigan is ranked among the top 10 states for major new and expanded facilities, which makes Michigan more than business-friendly. It makes Michigan business smart. To learn more, visit MichiganBusiness.org.
America's First News is online all the time. Follow us on Twitter at This Morning Show. Like us on Facebook or send us an email. This Morning at CompassMediaNetworks.com.
Thanks for being with us. Welcome into Monday, October 16. Gordon Deal with Jennifer Koschenka. Some of our top stories and headlines. An oil rig explodes on Lake Pontchartrain in Louisiana. At least 7 injuries. Firefighters gain momentum with Northern California wildfires. The Daily Mail says the Clinton Foundation will not return some $250,000 in donations from disgraced Hollywood producer Harvey Weinstein. Former Niners cornerback Colin Kaepernick has filed a collusion grievance against NFL owners. Justin Turner's walk-off homer beat the Cubs last night, and the Dodgers now lead the NLCS 2-0. Speaking of baseball, Game 3 of the American League Championship Series is tonight, with the Astros up 2-0 on the Yankees. Meanwhile, if you have watched the Yankees in some of the playoffs, you may have noticed that they are not George Steinbrenner's Yankees anymore. They are not even Derek Jeter's Yankees anymore. Wall Street Journal baseball writer Jared Diamond says suddenly, an organization known for its serious and business-like approach has adopted a surprising and fresh image for the new generation. It has embraced fun. Jared, what are we witnessing?
Well, the Yankees, for pretty much my entire life and really the lives of a lot of people, have always been good. They win every year. They have won, it seems like, every year for the last, you know, century or so, but they haven't exactly been what I would describe as a very likable team or a very fun team. They've been very businesslike. They have sort of an arrogant attitude. They act like they're better than everyone else, and anything that's sort of fun or silly is beneath them. But this team, this is a Yankee team that's different. It's not like that. This is a team that has found a way to be likable and also really good, as now they're, you know, in the ALCS, just a few wins away from the World Series.
It's often said that players can reflect the attitude of their coach, or in baseball, the manager. Is that the case here with
Joe Girardi is the opposite of fun. And I don't mean that as a slight on Joe Girardi. He is just an old school throwback kind of manager. He played for the Yankees in the mid to late 90s, came up through that influence of Derek Jeter, and he's kind of a stern guy. He's got the crew cut and the squared jaw. And this is a guy that has a degree in engineering from Northwestern, so he's clearly very smart. He's very disciplined. Sort of has a, he wasn't in the military himself, but has sort of a military kind of look and attitude. But he's had to adjust with his team. This is a team that's very young. It's the first really young team the Yankees have had in decades. And he is sort of forced to embrace a new outlook because of the players that he has.
Okay. What about this this dugout skit that they have after a home run?
Huh. Well, a few weeks ago, toward the end of September, right at the end of the regular season, Ronald Torres, a utility infielder, a backup, someone who doesn't play very much but has been a part of the team all year long, he sort of spontaneously started this little skit where when a player hits a home run, returns to the dugout, and they stage a little impromptu press conference interview in the dugout using various props as cameras and mics, and a bunch of players get involved. And it was really funny, and as it's gone on, the props have become much more elaborate. What started as a bat as a camera and a paper cup as a microphone is now turned into an actual box that's made to look like a camera. They have a real microphone with a custom-made mic flag. They have props as boom mics. It's now become a very elaborate, very sophisticated skit, and it's funny, and it's not something you would expect out of the Yankees. The Cubs, maybe, other teams, maybe, but not the Yankees. These Yankees are different.
Wow. Are their questions during those interviews better than yours?
Probably. They probably know to ask the right questions. Yeah. They're the ones playing, right?
We're speaking with Wall Street Journal national baseball writer Jared Diamond. He's got a piece called "These Are Not Your Father's Yankees." Have you found that maybe some older Yankees fans are not impressed by this?
I think it was probably an adjustment for some of the veteran players. The Yankees still have some veteran players. But a few things have changed. One, Derek Jeter's gone. He's been gone now for 3 years. And every day that goes by, the influence that he had over the team starts to fade away. And Derek Jeter was a great leader and a great player for the Yankees, of course. But he was a particular kind of leader. He really didn't make much time or have much use for frivolity. He was very businesslike. He came to work, did his job, went home. And that was Derek Jeter, and that rubbed off on the rest of the team. He's gone now. There are some veteran players that are still holdovers from that era. But what's different is the stars of this team are young. And that's something the Yankees have not had in a long time, where the best players, therefore the players with the most influence, are all 25, 24. Guys like Aaron Judge, Gary Sanchez, guys in their first and second year of Major League service, because those are the best players, that almost forces everyone else to get in line. The stars of the team tend to have some say in what the clubhouse is like, and this is the clubhouse that youth bring.
What about, and I hate to ask it, but it's got to come up, and you referenced it in the story, what about the potential for names on the back of the jersey or facial hair being allowed?
I think the names on the jersey we could pretty much guarantee will never happen. It won't happen. It's become so iconic, part of the Yankees look. The facial hair thing, well, that's a whole different story. That was George Steinbrenner's policy. He's obviously passed away. His sons are running the team now. They have said that they plan on keeping the facial hair policy, and maybe they will.
Thanks, Jared. It's Wall Street Journal national baseball writer Jared Diamond. 19 minutes now in front of the hour on This Morning, America's First News. Reminder, by the way, we can connect on social media. You can friend us on Facebook or follow us on Twitter with the username @ThisMorningShow. If you like some cynicism and sarcasm and some good-natured humor, you can follow me directly on Twitter at
Gordon Deal. Thanks for being with us. Welcome aboard. Beyond the headlines now, this morning's Mike Gavin is here with a look at some of the other stories you'll be talking about this morning.
Good morning. Well, when you're on unscripted live TV, as much as Al Michaels is, you're bound to utter something that you're going to regret from time to time. That would seem to be the case for something that Michaels said last night during Sunday Night Football on NBC when he tried to describe how improbable it was that the winless and depleted New York Giants actually had a 2-touchdown lead over the Denver Broncos.
I mean, let's face it, the Giants are coming off a worse week than Harvey Weinstein, and they're up by 14 points.
That comment set off immediate backlash on social media from many who were quick to point out that Weinstein's victims were the ones who have been made to suffer, not Weinstein himself. The backlash was so swift, in fact, that Michaels was forced to apologize on air for the comment just a short time later, which should be another lesson to all that joking about sexual misconduct has never been and will never be funny.
How about Chris Collinsworth's reaction?
Yeah.
He just did like a pfft. Into the microphone, I think, in your little soundbite there.
Yeah, yeah. He didn't have much constructive to add to that.
I don't think there was anything to add to that.
Trying to stay out of the fray, yeah, I guess.
What would have been better, I think, from Al Michaels is, do you believe in miracles?
Yes.
1980 Lake Placid applying to this game in which the 0-5 Giants somehow beat the Denver Broncos.
There you go. Thank you, Mel. Maybe he was trying to be more topical, I guess, and it didn't quite work out.
Oh, man, what a mess.
And if you're looking for a college degree in a growth industry, Gordon, literally and figuratively, we may have found one for you. A university in Michigan is offering an unusual degree in marijuana. According to the Detroit Free Press, Northern Michigan University in Marquette began its medical plant chemistry program this semester with about a dozen students in the first class. The program combines chemistry, biology, botany, horticulture, marketing, and finance. It's an unusual program since other universities offer classes on marijuana policy and law, but Northern Michigan's program is unique because the university is offering a 4-year degree addressing the science and business behind growing marijuana. University officials say the program fills a need because 29 states have legalized medical marijuana, including 8 states where marijuana is also legal for recreational use.
Wow.
Yeah.
Imagine that conversation as you're a young student.
Yeah.
At a networking event.
Right.
With other, you know, corporate hiring managers and stuff.
Right.
You're working the room. One says to you, "Hi, hey, young man, and you seem like a sharp guy. What do you do?"
Yeah.
I'm majoring in pot.
Right.
Great. Next.
Right. Or the conversation around the dinner table. Mom and dad, guess what I want to major in?
Right. Or the parents discussing how wonderful their children are.
Yes.
What's your son majoring in at Northern Michigan? Marijuana studies.
It may take a little while for that one to become more mainstream.
13 minutes in front of the hour. Thanks for being with us. Feel free to chip in your 2 cents, but it might cost you. As celebrities rush to condemn accused sexual predator Harvey Weinstein and share their own tales, 2 responses stood in stark contrast. You may have read that Lindsay Lohan claimed in an Instagram video that she felt very bad for the disgraced producer, and designer Donna Karan questioned whether women were asking for it. Well, etiquette expert Tom Farley spoke to Moneyish.com about chiming in on a hot topic at work. His tips, 1, avoid talking about these topics altogether. Most experts agree that polarizing issues like religion, politics, and sex are a no-go at work. 2, pick your battles. Beyond those topics, ask yourself, does this matter to my job? 3, if you're just starting your career and lack the confidence to speak up, you might want to look for allies to help. And 4, ask clarifying questions. You might want to try to learn about the other side. It's 8 minutes now in front of the hour on this morning. Jennifer Koshenka is back with more of America's First News.
Gordon, an oil rig exploded last night in St. Charles Parish, Louisiana, injuring at least 5 critically. Kenner Mayor Ben Zahn says authorities got 911 calls from shaken residents.
A lot of reports from Facebook, phone calls coming in, text messages coming in. Large sonic boom came into these residents, these neighborhoods.
One person is missing from the rig, which is operated by Clovelly Oil. Firefighters are gaining ground on the deadliest wildfires in California history as winds ease, while searchers comb charred ruins for more victims of the blazes that have claimed at least 40 lives. This resident decided not to evacuate despite orders to leave his home in Kenwood.
You never let your eye off it. We've been up very little sleep for the last week.
2 of the 3 most destructive fires in Northern California have been more than half contained. More than 5,700 structures have been destroyed by a dozen wildfires, which have consumed an area larger than New York City. Secretary of State Rex Tillerson says diplomatic efforts aimed at resolving the North Korean crisis will continue until the first bomb drops. That statement comes despite President Trump's tweets a few weeks back that his chief envoy was wasting his time trying to negotiate with Little Rocket Man, a mocking nickname Trump has given to North Korea's leader. Ireland has dispatched its armed forces to bolster flood defenses and is warning people against non-essential travel as the remnants of Hurricane Ophelia threaten the country with its worst storm in 50 years. Ophelia, the sixth major hurricane of the Atlantic season, has been downgraded but is still packing winds that could gust over 80 miles an hour. Justin Turner savored every last right at his three-run drive with two outs in the bottom of the ninth inning, won it for the Dodgers, 4-1 over the Cubs last night. Charlie Steiner had the call on KLAC.
Turner with a fly ball to center field. It's way back at the wall. A three-run walk-off home run for Justin Turner.
The Dodgers now lead the NLCS 2-0.
That is about as exciting as it gets in baseball. Last licks, walk-off homer, that's good stuff.
I was going to say, is anything exciting in baseball?
That's debatable as well. Yeah. When you said he savored every last stride, did he like really slow down?
Yeah,
like in such a way that he's going to get drilled with the first pitch he sees in game three for doing that?
We'll find out.
6 minutes now in front of the hour. Glad you're with us. It was not only firefighters who stood in the path of the Northern California wildfires, but civilians too. Contractors, skilled construction workers, even former wildland firefighters. Meanwhile, USA Today says late Tuesday night as the raging Atlas Fire bore down on the small Capel Valley community of a few dozen homes in the hills above the city of Napa, Kathy Pridmore's goats began giving birth. Her family was in the hills above her home fighting a fire that was threatening the land. Their family has called home since 1927. The Pridmores and their neighbors didn't have radios, a normally crucial tool, so Cameron Pridmore and his cousins used dirt bikes to relay messages between different groups and keep tabs on the fire's movements. And as the fire encircled the valley and the residents of Capel Valley cut fire line after fire line, Kathy helped deliver 21 baby goats. She said she's going to name some of the feistier baby goats, names like Fire, Smoke, and Ember. That'll do it for this hour. For Jennifer Koshenka, I'm Gordon Deal. Thanks for listening to This Morning, America's First News.